All right, powered by Red Media in partnership with TSN. This is Season 5, and this is Episode 69, a playoff edition of the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey. Have you tried the Canadian Club Ginger Ale? It's a refreshing alternative to beer. Well-balanced flavors. There's ginger, there's rye, the subtle notes of spice are there as well. The new formula, impressively 30% less sugar, 20% fewer calories. That is Canadian Club Ginger Ale. And there you are for our YouTube fans in Fort Lauderdale. You made the trek from New York, getting ready, of course, for games 3 and 4 of the Eastern Conference Final, which, by the way, I mean, we'll get to that conference. What a game 2 last night that ended in overtime. But here I am in a hotel in Frankenmuth, Michigan. Have you ever been to Frankenmuth?
Could you give me a geography lesson there,
geography. Well, it's about 20 minutes away from Saginaw, Michigan, which, of course, the Saginaw Spirit hosting the 2024 Memorial Cup. There's lots of reasons to spend time in this neck of the woods. So I'm driving, you know, I'm getting off the interstate, and I'm one of those GPS cowboys, right, Ray? So I know, it's like a 5-hour drive from Whitby, Ontario. So I punch in Saginaw, and I know, okay, well, that's going to take me around Flint, and eventually I'll get to Saginaw. I didn't even put the hotel location in until I felt I was like 10 miles, 20 kilometers, whatever it is. So I put in the hotel coordinates when I feel like I'm about 15 minutes away. Again, not paying any attention. All of a sudden, I come in, and there's this massive sign as you enter Frankenmuth, and it's like, welcome in. However,
does it say it like that?
Yeah, welcome in. So, yeah. I mean, I guess that's the German word for welcome. Sure. Welcome to Frankenmuth. And then very quickly you pass by Bronner's Christmas Wonderland, which, as I'm told by a friend of yours, Craig Goslin, who's the
goof.
Yeah, I mean, he's essentially the head of the Saginaw Spirit. Let's just call it what he is. He's the boss, right? They've done a great job here, by the way. But he gives me the history lesson of Frankenmuth and describes Bronner's as, I think he said, it's the largest Christmas outlet in the United States, which is saying
there
a lot.
So you learned something on the trip.
I did. But here's what I also learned. You and I are in the minority of people, evidently, that hadn't heard of Frankenmuth. Like,
never heard of it.
I mean, I'm talking to Holly, and she's like, come on, of course you know where Frankenmuth is. Like, everybody knows Frankenmuth. And I'm like, no, not everybody knows Frankenmuth. So
I'm going to tell you a quick story about Craig Goslin. Yeah. He's in our golf group. We get to travel around in some pretty cool places and on our summer trips. So each day is a new tournament and you get a new partner. And so one day, Craig and I are partners, and we kind of play the same, and we kind of grind it around, and he's a great guy, terrific guy. So we were pretty excited to play together. First round goes, we're like on 15 of the second 9, yeah, or the second 18, and he looks over at me in the cart, and he goes, you know, I thought this would have gone better. I said, I hear you, Goose. I thought this was going to be a good partnership.
I mean, so if I didn't know, and I don't know Craig very well. I mean, we had a great chat. And we talked about Cole Perfetti, who's, of course, iconic in Saginaw as one of the great Spear players. And as soon as Vincent Trocheck scored for the Rangers in game 2, I mean, there was like an electricity in the building as the Spirit were hosting the Moose Jaw Warriors in game 1 because, of course, Vinny Trocheck, beloved alumnus of the Saginaw Spirit. But if you didn't know Craig Goslin and you saw him from behind, from afar, I mean, he's almost a spitting image of Ken Holland. Like, their stature and everything about him is eerily similar. So anyway, we had a fun chat about you as well, and he's a big fan of your work. So
awesome. Hope you have a great trip down there. Yeah. I'm glad it got off to a good start.
It is, yeah. Time for headlines, brought to you by Tim Hortons. Hey, 2 new sparkling quenchers have hit their summer menu. How about the mango starfruit? It's a blend of tropical flavors and wild berry hibiscus with fruity and floral notes. Delicious summertime, refreshing beverages, perfect to beat the heat this summer, only at Tim's. Okay, why don't we start in the West with the Oilers and the Dallas Stars, and they're prepping for game two as we record this episode of Ray and Dregs on Saturday morning. You know, we're going to dig a little bit into game one and obviously the storylines around the captain, Connor McDavid, and how that looked in game one in Dallas. But I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper because so much of the questioning going into the Western Conference Final, Ray, was around whether or not Edmonton was going to get some push from the bottom six, which I think they did. They did in game one. That allowed Chris Knobloch to be a little bit more selective in how he rolls his lines. And then what about Stu Skinner? I mean, Jake Gottinger, I mean, he was fine. You know, there were a couple of bobbles. He fought the puck a little bit, but Stu Skinner was excellent in game one. Any of that, any of what I've just kind of presented, even remotely surprising to you after one game?
Skinner is better than he played against Vancouver. Even in the games he won in game six and seven, didn't really have a whole lot to do. And when the Canucks got a couple of clean shots, they ended up in the net. And so, I mean, he's going to have to stabilize and solidify his position. It's awesome if your guy steals a game. He just can't lose you a game.
Right, yeah.
And so where I thought Skinner was really good was in overtime. He made some really good saves.
Yeah.
But you also have to be lucky because in the first minute of overtime, Jason Robertson hit the post twice. And if the puck's a quarter inch either way, the game's over.
Yeah.
On that four-minute power play. So to be good, he had to have the luck first. And maybe that's a sign that things are turning a bit for him.
Yeah.
He does lose his balance. He does end up on his belly a little bit too often for a 6'5" guy. But I thought he was really, really solid.
Mm.
Like, really solid. The bottom of the lineup, as you mentioned, like Fogel and McLeod in particular, you know, in that middle six-ish spot,
yeah.
they've got to give them positive minutes. They can't just be out there skating around.
Yeah.
And Knobloch got what he could ask for, I think, from it, once you get past the top end of their lineup, except Dregs. And maybe this is just the way their team is. Outside of the top five guys, the rest of the lineup has to hold water.
Yeah.
Like they just have to play even par. Because look at who scored the goals in game one. Hyman, Dreisaitl, McDavid.
Yeah.
Same guys. Game seven in Vancouver, Nugent Hopkins and Bouchard as well were in there. So it's like those five guys are going to have to produce, and then that next layer is going to have to play even par.
Mm-hmm.
That's the formula, I think, for Edmonton to win. I do think it was pretty apparent without Roope Hintz, Dallas isn't the same team.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a game changer for them, and I don't know. I didn't see an update today. I was up early in that, but he seems like he's close to playing, and they could really, Dallas could use him.
Yeah, and it sounds like Adam Henrique is as well from Edmonton's standpoint. All right. Well, we'll dive into Connor McDavid and just the wild ride that was in overtime, and you almost have to go piece by piece here because it starts with his four-man high sticking penalty 17 seconds in where, Matt Duchene is holding his stick. Connor tries to get it away, and, you know, undeniably, he clips Duchene and earns the four-minute high sticking penalty. They review it, and the penalty is called. So let's start there and how effective that penalty kill is for the Edmonton, not just in that sequence, but generally throughout the playoffs. It's been a significant strength.
Okay, it's been amazing. I'll start with the penalty first. Clearly, either referee did not see it.
Yes. Yeah.
And so what I'm reading a lot online, what people aren't understanding is the reason the play had to stop is one of the linesmen had it.
Mm-hmm.
But the linesman can't put their arm in the air and call a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the rules for that to happen. There's two referees, not four. But when the whistle blows, they can converge and the linesman can say, hey, I had a good look at it and this is what happened. That's why the penalty was called in the way, in the shape it was called. The penalty kill has been terrific. Now, one of Ken Holland's
building blocks that he loves is to have big guys on the blue line because they take up space, they take up length. And so they found money with Vincent Desharnais.
Oh, boy.
Like you can say what you want, but nobody expects a guy that's drafted in the seventh round that's playing in the East Coast League to be one of your stalwart penalty killers.
Yeah.
And so he and Nurse get out there. They do a tremendous job. Desharnais is he's a puck eater. He blocks a lot of shots. Nurse has really done, an excellent job. That's why Cody Ceci's on the team, essentially, is he's got to provide stout defensive minutes as much as he can, 5-on-5, but the penalty kill too. Mm-hmm. The forwards are quick and smart. And, you know, McLeod and Fogle get after it. In particular, Derek Ryan's a real heady player. That's where the bottom end of the roster can and does have to contribute. But the penalty killing has been amazing. I had some number there. I think I got it written. Oh, yeah, they're one for their last 25. Like one power play goal and 25 chances. That's remarkable. And saved them because, you know, really the game's over in the first 4 minutes if that PK doesn't come through for them.
Right. So McDavid feels some shame. He's hot. Said it was just a torturous 4 minutes
in
that penalty box a long, long time. Has an opportunity to end the game in overtime. And I don't know what your thought was. I mean, as soon as he went wide, puck on stick, I'm like, oh, it's over. And whether it was just a split second delay to allow Chris Tanev to come in, get his stick there, allow Jake Oettinger to get the paddle down or what, I don't know. But again, McDavid just post-game says, I got to score that. I mean, how many times would he miss that opportunity, Ray? Like 1 in 1,000? And that was it?
We saw it. I was just flabbergasted that he didn't score. Like when he brought it to his forehand, I'm like, he's going to throw it under the – like there was enough time to go upstairs and he – I don't know. He just pushed it towards the net. And maybe Tanev bothered him enough or whatever it was. It was just bizarre that it was him. If it's another guy that doesn't score very much or very easily, you'd go, oh, man, he should have lifted it, but which is what you say anyway. But it was just bizarre that he missed it. And then you had to watch the intermission and wait 32 seconds for him to end it. A little later.
Expect more of the same. I mean, that tight type of hockey game in game two of the West.
I don't see how it changes. Here's a stat for you though, Dregs, and I know it only because we had it in our game last night. When a team loses two games at home at the beginning of the third round, whether it was the conference finals or the semifinals, as they used to call it, if the home team loses the first two games, that's happened 20 times in league history. The only time a team has come back and won was the 1945 Detroit Red Wings. So I would say this is virtually a must win for Dallas in game two. Just like with the Rangers last night in New York, a must win.
All right. Well, perfect segue to the Eastern Conference Final where you had a front row seat as part of the broadcast. And, you know, what is it about Barkley Goodrow or that type of player? I mean, what are you, 4 goals in like 80 regular season games?
Yeah, he's got four now, right?
4 goals in the playoffs, and two of those are game-winning goals. I think I read he has 0 overtime goals in 572 regular season games. And a couple of big ones for the New York Rangers. So just describe what you saw on the overtime winner by Goodrow.
Well, about the 0 goals in 572 games, he's not the type of player that'll play in 3-on-3. He never gets out.
Right.
Yeah. When it goes to overtime, he grabs a water bottle. Right? You just sit there.
Yeah.
I did a game a number of years ago. I know you'll remember it. Vegas and San Jose. Vegas was up 3-0. Cody Eakin was assessed a 5-minute major. San Jose scored 4 goals on the power play. Vegas tied it up. And in double overtime, Goodrow scored.
Yeah.
And I was doing that game with Gord Miller, and Goodrow sat in the middle of the bench for about 90 minutes. He had not been on the ice for at least a period and a bit of overtime. Just sat there, jumped on the ice, went down, scored. Hero. There you go. You know, like amazing. Last night he's on the ice for a defensive zone faceoff. And he wins the draw, and in the course of coming up the ice, they end up with a 3-on-2. He gets it out wide. Trocheck gives him a nice pass back, but the shot was perfect, right? It was a perfect shot, which it looks like you're going to need to beat Bobrovsky right now. I mean, he's been terrific.
Yeah.
So here we are. We're two games into the series. The Rangers have scored two total goals. Series is tied 1-1. It's going to be tight. And I was really impressed with the Rangers' push back last night. They played physically. As physically as they're going to play, they played fast. There were some times when they were hanging on. There were some times when Florida couldn't get out of their end. It was a very, very much a back and forth type of game. And I thought it was a terrific game, a really great game.
So I'm going to say something unusual and you tell me what it means, okay? Jiminy Crickets.
Yeah, made me crack up when I heard that quote today, mainly because it did not come from a 78-year-old fella. It came from a 6'8½, 21-year-old forward. And I thought it was hilarious.
Matt Rempe is a beauty. And I mean, look, he's a fan favorite in New York for an abundance of reasons. And you know, whether you like fighting or you don't like fighting, I mean, that's part of his game. You know, he's just a presence out there for all the things that you know of, Ray. And we'll talk about him and just the play of the Rangers in general. But near-death experience for Ray Ferraro, right? With Matt Rempe barreling towards you. You could have been a bug on a windshield there, my friend.
Well, as I said in the broadcast, there's no courage at this point. For me, I'm in there in a suit and here comes this runaway train and I can see he's going to finish the hit from about 20 feet away. And I'm like, and I'm hooked up there, right? I got my headset on and I'm like, there's only so far you can go. So whatever happened on the hit, I saw it on the replay. Cause I had my back turned and my hands up. I'm like, I've been hit and punched in the face too much. You know, I didn't punch too many people. I wasn't big enough or strong enough to do, but I got it the other way. I was not going to get steamrolled by him. And he had, you know, the Rangers were really kind of quiet in the first game and it felt like this was a time to get Rempe back in the lineup. He played a terrific game last night. He played just over 10 minutes, I believe. He was excellent. He did his job. He didn't turn pucks over. He played the puck forward. He got in on the forecheck. He had a couple of really solid hits on the forecheck. Here's the thing, though, with an enforcer, is that unless there's somebody to fight on the other team, that goes away and you have to be able to play. The two biggest hits by far in the game were delivered by Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, not even close. Kulikov hit Wenberg in the first period. That was an interference penalty, a well-called play. And the second was Lomberg ran over Zibanejad. Mm-hmm. But they don't really have an enforcer per se. And what's Rempe going to do about it? He's sitting on the bench when those hits are delivered.
Right.
But he did his job. I can't imagine Peter Laviolette would have said, oh, I wish he would have done this.
Like
he energized the team. He was physical, didn't take a penalty, did his job. And he certainly will be in game three. I do think they lost Jimmy Vesey. He looked like a left shoulder. And so maybe Kaapo Kakko goes back in. You know who was out in warm-up was Blake Wheeler.
Ooh.
So he is
getting close. Yeah.
So he must be an option if he's out in warm-up. So it'll be interesting to see if Vesey can't go, which I don't think he will. Whether it's Kakko back in or Wheeler to play his first game since January.
Which would be interesting, right? I mean, you know, he doesn't have the pace that he once did, but everything else around Blake Wheeler's game would definitely help the New York Rangers.
And it depends how often they're going to use him. Are they looking for 7 to 8 minutes? Can he do that? I mean, his conditioning can't be great. No matter how hard he's worked, he hasn't played a game in months.
Yeah.
Be an interesting decision.
Well, what a series, man. I mean, both sides, East and West, yeah. As it should be. The Final Four needs to be this level of entertainment. And it can be tight checking, low scoring games, man. It's edge of the seat stuff on both sides. Yeah. I mean,
the game in New York was outstanding. Tremendous playoff game.
All right, let's go off ice for a bit here, Ray, and talk about some of the news around the NHL. Not necessarily surprising as it continued to linger, and that's New Jersey hiring Sheldon Keefe as its new head coach. And the only reason I was a little bit surprised, again, is because Sheldon made it clear in his video message to the world that he was going to recharge, you know, wanted to spend some time with his family. It just feels obvious, doesn't it, that – yeah, he wanted to do that, but there are also so few really solid opportunities in the NHL when you're picking your next coaching opportunity that this was one he probably couldn't pass up.
How many times has a guy said, I'm going to retire from broadcasting, coaching, something or other? 1 year later, they're back.
They're back, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it only took Sheldon 1 day. to put that message out saying I need some time. And then when the Devils, like when Travis Green was hired in Ottawa and, you know, the coaching search was not even search, the interviews were going on, you know, what you say one day, if it's not even an opportunity, how would you even think about it?
Yeah.
You know, so Keith clearly had to, you know, he's got to talk to family. You've got young kids. You got to make sure the schools are sorted and all that off ice stuff. And then it must be pretty exciting to go, you know what? That's a really good, young, exciting group. I think I can do some work with that. Yeah. The team needs some work. I mean, it's like a shiny new apple, but you know, like there's lots of great things to be excited about. They need a goalie somewhere. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's coaching. They need a goalie. The one thing is you're going to need patience because take a look at the teams that are this far or that do well in the playoffs. They're not young and they're not small.
Right.
They're veteran teams and they're big. And so through time, Jersey's going to get better because they're going to mature. They've got to flatten out that roster a little bit, balance it out. But I know I saw a growth and just the perception of how Sheldon was coaching at the end of his tenure in Toronto that I think will be beneficial to him when he gets to Jersey. I think Jersey's getting a better coach than Toronto first got. A more experienced, a more obviously more seasoned, maybe better able to handle and sell his systems so the players can grasp it quickly. I think the excitement to go to Jersey probably went, you know what, this is something I can't pass up.
Right. Well, there wasn't a gap in job opportunities for Sheldon Keefe. Most definitely was for Scott Arneil, who was named head coach of the Winnipeg Jets on Friday. So another head coaching chance for him. You know, you go back to his days years ago on the bench of the Columbus Blue Jackets. We all know how that ended up. You know, he was the front runner in this process, I think, right from the get-go when Rick Bowness decided that, all right, I'm going to call it a career. Yeah, Kevin Cheveldayoff talked to Craig Berube, talked to Todd McClellan, talked to others, right, as part of his process. That's what managers do. But I know that this is a hire that the players fully endorse. You know, in the time that Arnie had on that bench as Bones was helping Judy, you know, through her health issue in season, and then later in the year, you know, he had his own problems. Arneil spent enough time around that group, even as an interim head coach, to earn their trust and earn their favor. So we'll see. I guess you analyze based on wins and losses whether or not the hire is the right. And in this case, it seems like it should be.
It is, and I can, you know, I'll tie Jim Hiller to this too in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is interesting and informative what the players have to say because they, you know, in both cases, they had an interim coach that's now the head coach. But what's also very valuable is the managers get to see how the team plays, how the team's prepared, how the coach conducts himself, conducts his practices, conducts his media, conducts the planning, of not just the game, but everything that goes in with coaching a team. The managers got to watch that in real time.
Yeah.
And so the players could say, yeah, oh, he's a great guy. He does, runs good practices. And if the manager's not comfortable, they're not going to hire him.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to a certain extent what the players say. The fact that they get a long enough glimpse to be comfortable with it is, I mean, that's really what, an interview process is you're trying to get comfortable with the guy you're going to hire. They had a head start and they watched them coach games as well. So, interesting, that neither went outside LA and Winnipeg, and, both guys will get, for Hiller, it's his first head job where he's not an interim, and Arneal, it might as well be. It was so long ago in Columbus.
Right. And now we look at Seattle. Is it Dan Bylsma, who's doing a great job in Coachella? Is he going to get promoted? There's been some loose speculation around Joel Quenneville. I think that has more to do with the history, the relationship between Q and Francis. And then in San Jose, you've got Warsawski, you've got Marco Sturm, you've got potentially Jeff Blashill. So still a couple of jobs.
One name just to throw out there, and I don't even know if it's a thing, is that Manny Malhotra was hired in Abbotsford as the Canucks farm team. That Jeremy Colleton, who was the head coach in Chicago, did a really good job with the Canucks prospects in the American League. Did a really good job. They couldn't come to terms, obviously, and so Colleton's out there too. So is Dean Evason. There's a lot of guys that are floating around, and now all of a sudden the jobs get picked off one at a time, and now you got a whole bunch of guys in very few spots available.
All right. Just a quick thought on the transition in Carolina here, right? So Don Waddell announces through the Carolina Hurricanes that he's resigned as general manager. As Pierre LeBrun and I have been tweeting here on Saturday, all indications are he's going to oversee hockey operations of the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's a holiday weekend in the U.S., so the contract work needs a little bit of time to get sorted out. So, he'll be president, he'll be general manager, he'll be a lot of different things for the Blue Jackets. They just have to get that finalized. Eric Tulsky, in the meantime, named interim general manager for the Carolina Hurricanes. Why don't we just focus on Waddell and the Blue Jackets?
Well, I'm going to say quickly about Carolina.
Yeah. Okay.
You've got an interim general manager. If he's not going to be your full-time general manager, this is a really tough time to take over in an interim basis.
Yeah.
They have a pile of unrestricted free agents. They have restricted free agent and Martin Natchez that they got to get signed or do something with. Natchez's dad was saying, went out in the press and said, he wants to be traded. I mean, that's from his dad. So that's a tough spot for him. And that gets us, that was just a touch up on, because I don't know what's going on in Carolina yet. But if Donnie's in Columbus, it's a big job with a lot of very good young players that really haven't even scratched the surface yet.
And you wonder what, Waddell's next task will be. I mean, it's getting to know everybody inside the organization. With the exception of the coaching staff, and I think Josh Flynn, basically everybody's been given permission to talk to other clubs. You're talking about your scouting staff, all of those. So he has got a mountain of work to do. And it'll be curious to see how long he occupies all of those positions. Maybe the right candidate surfaces after the playoffs. And you go, okay, that's the guy that I want to come in as my manager. Rick Nash gets an elevated position, and you work with that group. So, anyway, it's Columbus needs some good news, and they need more good people, and Donnie Waddell certainly fits in the category of good people.
Yeah, I would suspect, when he hires a coaching staff, it won't be a guy that's a first-time coach.
Right.
I don't know this. I'm suspecting it would be, the whole vision would be to put in a stable, experienced group.
Yeah.
Right through the managers, down to the staff, to the scouts, to try and stabilize a team that kind of been going side to side here for a while. you know, just to see if you can get the bus driving straight down the road. That's got to be the, that's got to be the first task.
Well, but, you know, and I guess the first task, though, to back it up a bit would be to decide, is Pascal Vincent your head coach or isn't he, right? I mean, correct, he's under contract. So, but there's been all kinds of speculation on the likelihood, possibility of a change there. So that'll be down the path for future editions.
But it won't be too long because Drake's were, what's today, May 20, whatever, the draft's a month. Like, things are going to go fast. Away.
Yeah. All right, those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons.
Canadian summers just hit different with Tim's. I know it's up. Introducing two new sparkling quenchers made with natural flavors and colors. Memories are made with quenchers. It's time for
Tim's. Our interviews on Ray and Dregs are brought to us by Canadian Club 1858 Original. A couple of questions from Ask Ray and Dregs Anything. You can send us your queries to us on X and Instagram at Ray and Dregs or on the website, rayanddregs.com. Jeff Gagnon, Ray, has a travel question for you. And now, this may seem somewhat obvious routine to you and I or any player, coach, anyone associated with a club, but I think from a fan perspective, it has some merit. Okay, so first of all, Jeff says, hey, guys, condolences. Heard about Dutchie. Sad day for everybody in sports. So thank you for that, Jeff. Teams fly on private charters, but how do they get on the plane? Does the head coach just sit there and count heads like in a kindergarten class? Or do they just walk on? And if so, isn't there when you land on the other side, oh, well, they need to figure it out? Like, he's got all kinds of questions about, like, they're not fans. They don't typically clear through customs the same way that I would or you would have. So just quickly explain the whole process of this.
A lot of times the teams pay for a customs officer to be at the arena. Yeah. So they clear customs in the rink. They get on the bus. The bus drives them to the bottom of the plane ramp. And unless you're an idiot, you can't miss. You get off the bus and you walk up the next stairs that are 15 feet away. When they charter from home, there'll be a time at 2 o'clock, say you're leaving, and the team services guy is sitting there with his checkboard and, or, you know, his clipboard, and he's checking names off as guys, you know, get on the plane. Everybody's got an assigned seat. You sit in the same seat all the time. Coaches sit together. Then there's usually the media. Then there's the food at like the galley, and that separates the media and the coaches from the players. Players usually at the back. It's pretty regimented. I mean, like, there is not much to go wrong. I mean, like, you would really have to work hard to go to the wrong place. Like, even I could find it, put it that way.
Yeah. Historically, it'd be fun to have like a half a dozen or maybe more stories of the guys that just didn't make the charter. You know, I mean, whatever happens. End of a road trip, end of the playoffs, whatever. Some guy gets tangled up into some nonsense. And that stuff doesn't happen anymore. But back in the day, occasionally, right, it would happen.
Okay, this was before travel. One of my all-time favorite teammates, Kevin Dineen. So we're flying out of Hartford and we're flying to LA for the start of our long Western trip, which there were only, you know, there wasn't like there was all the Southern teams now. You went to LA and you had to get started there. So we were connecting through Chicago. Kevin had a tardiness issue. Like, this was not, he was always kind of the last guy, half packed, half disheveled to get on the flight. But it was a commercial plane. Like, he had to get on. Mm-hmm. They weren't holding the plane. Yeah. So he's late and he's racing his way to the airport and gets an fender bender. So the plane's going. He's not on it. He missed it. So everyone's like, oh my God, what's he going to do? Like, he's so cooked. Like, so what he did was he got a direct flight. When we connected in Chicago and then flew to LA and got to the hotel, Kevin was sitting at the pool already. He's like, what took you guys so long?
Wow.
And he was, and we were like in our first or second year, we're like, what a move. What a move. He had a big bucket, had a big bucket of beer there, so all the vets weren't too upset. And everybody was out by the pool. It was a spectacular recovery.
Oh, that is so good. Good question, Jeff. Thank you. I always love that. The questions that lead to stories, and that's a terrific one. This could be a buddy of yours. I'm not sure. It only gives a first name. It's Dan in Vancouver. And Dan asks, Ray, what did you think of Philip Ronick's tense media availability? He clearly doesn't love doing media, but if he wants to sign long-term in a Canadian market, isn't that something he needs to get more comfortable with? Or does that even matter? Thanks for taking my question. Love the show.
Yeah, I think I got a pretty decent idea.
We're thinking the same guy, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So this is what I'm going to say. If a guy, I don't think he should have answered the questions like that. Now, there is a second part to the interview that didn't get on that when, you know, all the testy clips that we saw with the reporter's name's Jeff Patterson. A few minutes later, Farhan Longy from TSN asked him a similar question, maybe 5 or 7 minutes later. And it was almost like in that time, he went, you know what? That wasn't quite right.
Yeah, I got it.
And he answered the question.
Yeah.
He answered it far differently. As far as, so if he doesn't want to do media, but you think he's a really good player, you're going to sign him. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't want to do media and he's not a good player, then you're not going to sign him. Or if he doesn't do media or does media and you can't afford him, then you're not going to sign him. Yes, part of the job is the media. And I wish more guys would understand that it's not that hard. Just do it. You say you want to grow the game. If you grow the game, you get more revenue. If you get more revenue, the salary cap goes up. Like at the base level, that's what it's all about in that regard.
Yeah.
It's to provide information or stories or insight to people that watch and are interested in the game. So there'll be more that watch and more that'll be interested. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, he had a burr in his saddle when he sat down there to answer. I mean, the questions are all the same. Yeah. Were you hurt?
Yeah.
No, you weren't hurt. Well, then why'd you have why was your first half much more productive than your second half? Like you could have done the interview in your head before you sat there.
Yeah.
And so I wish he would have just handled it the way he did the second time.
Okay. All right. Final question. Ask Ray and Riggs anything. Steven in Red Deer. And this one's interesting. He says, I want to ask Ray if he thinks Evan Bouchard is a candidate now for the Conn Smythe. It's early. And then, look, I mean, Steven says it seems like he's been in on a lot, if not most of the Oilers' big goals in the playoffs. With his defensive game starting to round out, is he considered a true number one defenseman? So two-part question. I mean, is he a number one defenseman, and is he a Conn Smythe candidate?
Well, I'll go with the second, the Conn Smythe. Yes, absolutely. If I were rating the Conn Smythe candidates right now from Edmonton, he would be second, in my mind, second behind Draisaitl.
Agreed.
As far as a number one D, he's getting there, and if he's not a one, he's a two. Like he's in your top pair.
Yeah.
I still think there's a few defensive things that make you go, oof. But, man, oh, man, he's taken immense strides. Mm-hmm. He's having an amazing playoff. He had a fantastic year. And those defensive oopses that I talk about, they're fewer and farther between. Like, that's growth.
Like it is.
Just think, 9 teams could have drafted him. You know, I mean, Quinn Hughes was in front of him, but there was some guys in front of him that if that draft was redrafted, I don't think Bouchard goes where he does.
Yeah.
Sure he wouldn't.
Yeah. Do you give coaching should we throw some flowers at Paul Coffey? He's embraced more of an old school approach. It's not like Coffey is sitting there breaking down yards of video with Evan Bouchard, but he would have significant influence into how Chris Knobloch manipulates the pairings too, right? and puts Bouchard okay, in
so
the right
if,
spot.
If we're going to kick coaches in the ass when things go wrong, you've got to tap them on the back too when for their input when things go right. Like, you know, Paul is he's really smart. He's really fiery. That doesn't maybe come out sometimes. Like, he's intense without throwing stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
I think his mentorship, but also the pairing with Ekholm has really accelerated Bouchard to the point where, I mean, the guy's playing 25 minutes a night. Like, what more could you be asking from him? He's producing at a crazy clip. He's had a great run.
All right, Stephen, thank you. Thanks to all for submitting to Ask Ray and Driggs Anything, and continue to fire them our way, and we'll get to all of the questions on Ask Ray and Driggs as the playoffs unfold here in the Western Conference, Eastern Conference Finals. All right, Ray, we've had enough of your time, buddy. You've got a rare off day in Florida. So what do you
first
what do you
thing on that? What do you think's the first thing on the agenda? It's about what time is it? 12:30 here, something like that.
Yeah.
I got on a flight at 7. So what do you think the first thing on the agenda is?
Well, it's either eat or have a quick nap.
Oh, nap.
Yeah. Just take nap, the edge eat. Off and then yep. what?
Nap, eat, beach, workout.
Yeah, I wondered if you maybe were going to tee it up, but man, there's too much jammed into one day.
And too much jammed in, and it's, quite frankly, it's kind of hot.
Is it? No.
I'm not muggy. A midday guy. Muggy. No. But if somebody were to offer, I think I'd probably think about it.
Or you go
games early. Games early tomorrow afternoon, though, so got to get prepped. 3:00 Eastern, ABC, Game 3, Rangers, Panthers, be there.
Awesome. How's well, that? We will be paying attention. We will be
and enjoy.
Watching.
Head over to the Christmas store, Dregs. Do some shopping. Bring Holly back a bow or whatever they're called. Bow, whatever those wreath things. Bring her back something. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to slip that by customs. Do you have anything to declare? Oh, nothing but this Christmas wreath.
You know what, Dregs? Awesome. If you want to do something for the podcast, you said it's a heavily German-themed town.
Very Bavarian, yeah.
Yeah, go get some lederhosen, take a picture, put it on social media.
It's not that kind of a podcast, Ray. Me and lederhosen. I don't think so. But I have work, seen people in lederhosen here. I'm not.
I think it would really be positive. I think you should maybe give it a thought.
Okay, I'll go out. I've got a couple of hours here before game time, so I might go and scout out and see what I can find. All right, buddy. Have a good day.
Thanks. All the best. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Driggs and make the podcast possible. Our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.